Welcome to my monthly podcast series titled Becoming a Sage. My name is Jan Fried, but you can call me Dr. Jan. I blog about leading, living, and saging or conscious aging. I'm passionate about helping people get from where they are to where they want to be, particularly in the second half of life. I also say I'm out to retire the word retirement. We are not retiring and certainly not retiring from life, but we're moving on to something else, and I believe it takes time and intentional thought to successfully move on to what's next in life. Today I'm interviewing Dr. Louise Aronson. Louise Aronson, MD, MFA, is a leading geriatrician, writer, educator, professor of medicine at the University of California, San Francisco, and author of the New York Times bestseller, Elderhood, Redefining Aging, Transforming Medicine, and Reimagining Life. Elderhood has been praised as a monumental book about growing old in America, with powerful arguments and revolutionary conclusions that will challenge your assumptions and open your mind about aging. She has been published in many publications here and has earned many nominations. Her work has been featured on Today, CBS This Morning, NPR's Fresh Air, just to name a few. And I actually got introduced to Dr. Aronson through a publication called Next Avenue because she was included in the 2019 Influencers in Aging. So welcome to Becoming a Sage, Dr. Aronson.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Well, it's wonderful. And I just have a few prepared questions here and want to tap into your wisdom here about aging because we definitely share the same passion. What's your definition of elderhood?
Well, elderhood is the word for the third phase of life. So we begin in childhood, and then in the middle, we're in adulthood, and then in the third phase, we're in elderhood. So it's really hard to have a society set up for a people if you don't even have language for a stage of life. And we all sort of automatically accept that childhood encompasses everything from a little tiny neonate to a bulky adolescent or young adult, and that adulthood goes from somebody in their 20s who's still figuring out who he or she is and how they're going to make enough money to live to someone in their 60s who's at the height of their career. And yet when we talk about old age, we sort of say old, and then we mean basically the half century between age 65-ish. I mean, some people get old at younger ages because of hard lives, and some people become old a little bit later. You know, it's sort of like there isn't an exact dividing line between being a young adult and being a teen. But basically, there are these decades of life, and we tend to reduce it to one sort of abstraction of old, when really there is as much variety among people between ages of 65 and 105 as there are between neonates and young adults. And so elderhood, it gives us one of the bits of language we need to acknowledge that when we make parks or hospitals or educational centers or movie theaters or restaurants, we need to think about kids, adults, and elders.
Yes. Well, you know, it's interesting because language is so tricky. And, you know, many of us, I'm not saying I agree with this, but many people struggle with elder, you know, the word elder, like Elder Hostel changed their name to Rhodes Scholar.
Right.
You know, and so people don't like old, they don't like older, they don't like elder. But I think elder has a real charming wisdom to it.
Well, yeah. So most people, I actually start my book off with a story about a colleague of mine at UC Berkeley called Guy Micco, who doesn't exercise. I mean, he was doing it with his students when I heard about it, but he's actually done it with people from all ages. And he gives people scratch paper and he says, you have 1 minute. I'm going to put a word on the board. I just want you to respond. And the first one he puts up is old, gives them 1 minute, says stop. Then he puts up elder, gives them 1 minute, says stop. And for old, they'll say wrinkled, decrepit, you know, feeble, frail. And, you know, do those things come in the later stages of elderhood without question? But people say it as sort of pejoratives and negatives instead of the natural evolution of a human life as it is. But then for elder, they say respect, wisdom, power, influence. And the interesting thing there is that the two words mean the exact same thing when applied to a human being. And it turns out when they do surveys of people, none of the words for old age are acceptable to people who are old. And that really means the problem isn't the language. The problem is an ageism that is so entrenched in us that we've created a society of, you know, fewer opportunities and more self-fulfilling, scary prophecies than are necessary.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. Well, one of your goals is optimizing health care for older adults. Why do you believe this is important?
Because right now we hurt old people so much in hospitals, and then we blame old age. So if you look at adverse drug reactions, old people hugely disproportionately affected. And why is that? Because when you look at drug trials, they usually exclude old people either blatantly on the basis of age in ways that you're not allowed to have prejudice anymore against people on the basis of gender or race, or they exclude them by comorbidities, by which I mean, like, if you have certain diseases, say you have high blood pressure, or you've had a heart attack, or you've had cancer, or you have some arthritis, or you have Parkinson's or something, then you're not in the study. But then they actually give the medicine to the people with all those conditions, because that's some of the things that happen as we age. And when they have bad reactions, they blame the person instead of the bad science that said, this is going to be okay for you, even though we already said you were different to begin with. We also don't train people to take care of older bodies. So medical schools last 4 years, and we get 3 or 4 months on kids, and in some places still, and in my era, 3 or 4 hours on old people. Now we're up to a couple of weeks in most places. And then the whole rest of the time is on adults. And if you look at who's in hospitals, it's, you know, 35% to 40%, depending on where you are, but on average, about 40% are old people. So 40% of the curriculum should be about older bodies. You know, a kid knows that an older body looks and functions differently than a younger body. We, you know, you line up an 8-year-old, a 48-year-old, an 88-year-old. We all know which is which.
Right.
And that's because they're different. So you can't expect people to take good care of bodies if they haven't learned how those bodies work.
Wow.
It's horrifying.
It is. Yeah. And again, you would say, what is wrong with that? That, you know, if you just use common sense,
It's the same thing that makes people hate all the words about being old, mm-hmm. even when they are old, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, our ageism is so entrenched that we harm ourselves routinely. Mm-hmm. It's tragic, really. And so one of the things I've been advocating for people is, you know, okay, let's take the better word, let's take elder, but own that you're an elder, because the fact is that look at who's running the country, look at who's running all kinds of companies, look at the benefits of becoming an elder. I loved what you said about not retiring or retiring the world retirement, because
right.
we know that as people reach the classic age of retirement, they tend to get happier. And that's about finding meaning and purpose and not having to work 80 hours a week, which I'm doing currently, which is no fun. I can't wait to be an elder.
I get it. I totally get it. I'm actually reading the book now, The Happiness Curve.
What I was talking about.
Right, exactly. Or about that anyway. You're a geriatrician. So what is a geriatrician, and why did you decide to become one?
Love that. So a geriatrician is a doctor for elders, for old people, in the same way that a pediatrician is a doctor for children or young people.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, the term was purposefully coined to be analogous. So the idea is that if you have a family physician, you're covered. But if you don't, as a kid, you'd have a pediatrician. As an adult, you'd have an internist. And as an elder, you'd have a geriatrician. And so to become a geriatrician, you learn first general adult medicine, and then you spend another 1 to 3 years learning about older bodies and lives and needs and medications and treatments, because we all know they're different. And so we actually are trained to take care of older people. And I did not mean to, I actually meant to be a pediatrician. But when I did my pediatrics rotation, what I learned was that the kids all loved the nurses, and they really didn't like the doctors very much, because we would come in and hurt them. And it was one night sticking a needle repeatedly into a 2-year-old who was crying when I realized I could not become a pediatrician. Isn't it? It's not how pediatricians think about what they do, of course, and helping children is a totally wonderful thing. But you know, my experience was such that I thought, like, I can't be doing this, and I couldn't explain to the two-year-old. And so I found that with adults, I could actually talk it through with them and say, you know, here's what I'm suggesting, and here's why I think it's worth it, and all those good things. And so I trained in internal medicine, and I still hadn't really thought of geriatrics. But then a couple things happened. One is I had a clinic that had relatively more older people, just because, like, we get these random clinics we inherit from another resident. And I found, number one, that I loved their stories. I'm just interested in people more than diseases. And the longer you've lived, the more experiences you have. So that was fascinating. I found that we were routinely hurting patients, and I made some mistakes myself where, you know, something would come out and we would just say, well, this is good for adults and you're an adult. You know, in medicine, we like to use the term older adults for old people, you know, as if, and you know, in history, people used to draw pictures of kids as just short adults, and they looked ridiculous. If you've seen any of that art, it's just not what a kid looks like. And sort of similarly in medicine, we would harm people. And so one of the early stories in my book is about a woman in her 80s that ended up in the hospital because of something I did that was for an adult, and she was an elder. Mm. And that taught me that we were harming people. And I realized that there weren't enough geriatricians, that I loved my older patients, that it allowed me to do not just medicine, but cutting edge science and get to know their families and know their priorities to help make the right treatment decisions. And that because there weren't enough of us, I could do something that was really needed and appreciated in the world. And that always feels good.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, you and I are, you know, I always say I'm obsessed with aging, you know, but aging in a good way, in a good way.
Yeah. Yes.
So what are some of the best things about aging that people often don't talk about?
Oh, it's so funny. They don't talk about any of the good things, but, yeah. You know, you tend to have more control over your time. You get to work less, and many people get more selectivity. I mean, there is a reality that current retirement ages don't make sense for a lot of people, and they will run out of money. And so they end up doing different jobs, and sometimes the jobs they do as elders pay less than their previous jobs. But what I'm finding traveling the country is that even people who are doing those kinds of jobs, you know, the sort of wealthier and more advantaged get to do something completely different or something that they've always wanted to do. So people who were in business often find themselves making art or doing something social service wise, and people who are in social services and don't have enough money may start a company because there are a lot of entrepreneurs in their 70s and 80s now. But even people who just need to get a job seem to enjoy talking to people more. Like, I get a lot of shuttle and cab and rideshare drivers who are doing it because they need the money. And what they seem to say is like, yeah, I need the money. And yeah, I used to make more money and I hate that. But I meet all these incredible people. There's like a joy and a resilience and an emotional intelligence that people don't talk about as much as they should. Also, I think a really big thing is that people are much clearer on who they are and what they value. And so they spend more of their time doing that which matters to them and less of their time doing things that don't matter. Mm-hmm. Which is really interesting. People tend to talk about old age as a constriction or a loss of opportunities. Well, in the first place, when we're young, all those opportunities are overwhelming. And the fact is, you still pick a handful of them, right? Well, you're not going to do 10,000 things in your life.
Right.
So you're never taking advantage of all those opportunities. And in some ways, having a tree of opportunities with fewer branches enables you to see each one and decide which one you'd like to go down, you know? And that seems to really give people a sense of reassurance. Certainly the people who are, you know, aging in ways that are giving them great pleasure and satisfaction. I do find a lot of old people are doing fun things all the time. You know, my mother will rattle off what she's done and then say, what have you done? And I'll say, I've worked. You know,
I know.
So her life is more interesting.
I totally agree with this. And I love how you kind of said that. Well, from your book, tell us more about What's it mean to redefine aging or reimagine life? I mean, what are some key things that we need to do or remember or even to ask?
Well, I'd say we keep trying to make aging sort of smaller. So like people define old these days. I mean, old is always older than people are, which isn't actually true. But so we have this notion of if we make old really small, it won't be so scary or horrible. And I actually think the opposite is true, that we make old more relevant, more attractive, more accurately portrayed, so more of what it actually already is that we don't talk about, by making it bigger, by acknowledging there are three main phases of life: childhood, adulthood, and elderhood, and that elderhood is longer than childhood. It's as varied as childhood and adulthood, and is full of opportunities for innovation, for fun, for pleasure, and for dealing with its hard parts more effectively than we have. So I think that's one thing. And I also think that there's a lot of talk about sober tsunami, and it's true that there have never been more old people, and that's because, but we don't tell the real side of that story, which is that people used to die a lot in childhood and early adulthood, and I'm not looking back to days where you had to have extra children because some of your kids were inevitably going to die. I don't think that's positive. I think instead of taking this sort of fatalistic tsunami, you know, what are you going to do about a tsunami? Not much.
Right.
It's a wave. A wave is an opportunity. You know, we have so much innovation and creativity in this country and so much money, although it's not distributed optimally, perhaps, or certainly. But there's so much we could be doing. And if we simply applied the same creativity and innovation to old age as we do to childhood and adulthood, there would be so much more to enjoy, so much more truth about it out there, and so much less to fear.
That is so true. Absolutely. You know, embrace it. I think we should.
We should
embrace it because, you know, I mean, you and I, we know, and, you know, everybody's getting older every day, okay? Everybody.
Right.
So embrace it and make it a positive experience, I think. Well, Dr. Aronson, this is great. I always like to end with, what else should I have asked you that our listeners need to know? In other words, what wisdom on this topic do you want to share that I haven't asked?
I think there is really good data that the people who are happiest in old age are the people who adapt. So you don't expect yourself to be the way you were at 35, but you think, what do I want to be doing and how can I do it? And maybe it's the exact same activity as before, or maybe it's something different that gives you similar pleasure. So I guess, like, what is it that the question would be, what is it people can do? And I think it's recognized that it's different, and different isn't necessarily worse, that we get a choice. And there are so many ways to be happy and healthy, regardless of your age. And despite the admitted disappointments of the body, you know, and sometimes it's failures, that there are plenty of people who are old, senior, whatever you want to call it, elder, even ancient, who have lots of money or little money or somewhere in between, who are leading happy and fulfilling lives. And it's about thinking about what matters and adapting to circumstances. And accepting aging. There's actually good evidence on that too. So I guess it would be, what can people do? Exercise more, you know, keep having friends, eat good, nourishing food, and realize there are always opportunities.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, you've given us so much to think about. Thank you very much for agreeing to be on my podcast. And the emphasis on the series is on learning how to make the rest of life the best of life. So
I love that.
Yeah, I wish the rest is the best for you.
Thank you, and you.